Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Rescue crews in Nairobi have pulled a live baby from the wreckage of an apartment building that collapsed last Friday. Kenyan officials say the baby girl was found on Tuesday. She has no injuries, but needs food and water. Doctors are treating her for dehydration. The girl was identified as Delirin Saisi Wasiki. She is almost 6 months old. On Monday, a one-year-old girl was found in the collapsed building. She was also unharmed, but dehydrated. Rescuers are still searching for other survivors. Officials say 23 people died in the apartment building collapse. 93 others were reported missing. The building collapsed in Huruma, a crowded, poor neighborhood in Kenya's capital. The building fell down after heavy rains caused flooding and landslides in the area. Officials had already declared the building unsafe. It was unclear why apartment residents had not left it. Police detained the two owners of the building, as well as several government officials, after it collapsed. Last year, 8 buildings in Kenya collapsed. The Architectural Society of Kenya estimates that half the buildings in the country do not meet rules for building safety.
The International Maritime Bureau said 2 of 3 ship hijackings around the world took place in West African waters. Mario Ritter has more.
A new report says naval forces from West Africa have improved their ability to deal with robberies on the high seas. But it says pirates are changing the targets of their attacks. Instead of simply robbing ships, the attackers are now kidnapping sailors and demanding payment for their release. The report comes from the nonprofit International Maritime Bureau. The group follows crimes at sea. Although piracy is decreasing worldwide, the International Maritime Bureau says attacks on shipping are increasing in West Africa. The area has some of the world's most dangerous waterways. The group said that 2 of 3 ship hijackings reported during the first 3 months of 2016 happened in the Gulf of Guinea. Pirates kidnapped 44 sailors in the Gulf during this period. An anti-piracy group called Oceans Beyond Piracy reported that pirates in the Gulf of Guinea are increasingly taking hostages. Matthew Waljay is the lead author of the group's report. He says hostages are often taken to Nigeria's Niger Delta area and held there until a ransom is paid. That is a change from past years, he says. Pirates used to attack ships and take their cargo and fuel. Waljay says one reason for the change is that taking goods from ships takes too much time. In addition, West African navies have improved their ability to deal with ship hijackings.
The time that it takes means that it's more likely to be interdicted, which then reduces the possibility of success.
Kidnapping sailors, he says, appears to be faster and less risky for the pirates.
It takes a little bit longer from start to finish, but the actual incident itself is shorter, and the likelihood of success is higher.
Hostage taking, however, involves more violence. Last year, 23 people were killed in incidents of piracy in the Gulf of Guinea. Waljay says that local navies are getting better at fighting piracy. He gave the example of an incident last February when the navies of Ghana, Togo, and Nigeria tracked a hijacked ship. The ship was eventually raided and most of the sailors rescued by the Nigerian Navy.
The response is getting better, and this may be a temporary uptick.
Waljay said a long-term solution to the issue would be for governments to do more to try arrested pirates. I'm Mario Ritter.
President Barack Obama's oldest daughter, Malia, will graduate from high school in a few weeks. But she will wait a year before she begins college. The announcement may lead other parents and teenagers to do the same. Bruce Alpert has this story.
Malia Obama's decision to wait a year before going to college is bringing new attention to gap years. A gap year is when a student takes a year off after high school to do volunteer service, travel, or work before starting college. The White House announced on Sunday that President Barack Obama's oldest daughter will wait until the fall of 2017 to start classes at Harvard University in Massachusetts. The announcement led to lots of news stories about gap years. Some observers think her decision might lead other high school graduates to wait a year before continuing their studies. It is going to be the biggest thing ever for gap year programs in the United States, said Joe O'Shea, director of undergraduate research at Florida State University. Harvard University urges students to consider taking a gap year to get some much-needed rest before entering college. Many of us are concerned that the pressure on today's students seem far more intense than those placed on previous generations, said a message on Harvard's website. President Obama said that he and his wife, Michelle, are facing up to the day when their daughter, Malia, leaves for college. The president said he decided not to speak at Malia's high school graduation because it would be too emotional. I'm going to be sitting there with dark glasses, sobbing, Obama recently told talk show host Ellen DeGeneres. Obama has said his family will remain in Washington, D.C., after his presidency ends in January, so his youngest daughter, Sasha, 14, can finish high school. Both Obama daughters attend Sidwell Friends, a private school in the city. The White House did not provide details of what Malia, 17, will do during her gap year. Harvard said many students divide up their gap year with work, travel, study, and volunteering. Joe O'Shea wrote the book, How Delaying College Changes People in Ways the World Needs. He said that delaying college is generally a good thing. He said the year off gives students a chance to get a better sense of what they want to study when they begin college. But a gap year is not for everyone, noted Sally Rubinstone, a former admissions counselor at Smith College in Massachusetts. For many, she said, it is a way to explore activities near home or afar that you never had time to experience before. Her comments appeared on the website collegeconfidential.com. But Rubinstone said some have been known to spend their gap year watching television shows or cooking French fries at the local McDonald's restaurant. The American Gap Association estimates that between 30,000 and 40,000 U.S. students a year are taking a gap year. According to O'Shea, gap year started in Britain during the 1960s and spread to other European nations, Australia, and New Zealand. There are also gap year programs in Japan, and recently, wealthy Chinese started signing up for them. But taking a gap year can be costly. A group called Where There Be Dragons offers international gap year programs. It lists a price of $14,900, not including airfare, for a three-month gap year program in Nepal, for example. Chris Yeager is the group's founder. He admits families that do not have the resources might find some programs out of reach. He says his and other programs offer some financial aid. We're finding that students completing high school are looking for a really big adventure, doing something they know that they may never have a chance to do again, Yeager said. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The San Francisco Bay Area has the highest housing costs of any place in the United States. One reason is the short distance between San Francisco and Silicon Valley, California's high technology center. Dorothy Gundy has this story.
Housing costs are rising in Northern California because of a small supply of rental apartments and growing demand for them by technology workers. A strong economy and the technology industry have been blamed for a housing crisis in the San Francisco Bay Area. The industry pays high wages to many of its workers. Because the area is home to many high-tech companies, the workers are willing to pay more for housing. The average cost for a one-bedroom rental apartment in San Francisco is nearly $3,590 a month, according to the website Zumper. Prices are similar in many nearby communities. That rent is even higher than New York City, the second most costly market in the United States. Zumber reported this month that the average rent in New York for a one-bedroom apartment was $3,340. California renters can expect to pay a lot to live in places like San Jose, which is about 80 kilometers from downtown San Francisco. Across the bay in Oakland, some investors are buying up buildings and then turning them into high-priced apartments. While rental costs go higher, evictions from rental housing is also a problem. Activists say some landlords have forced people to move from rental units so they can be offered to tech workers, who will pay a higher price. Erin McElroy is with a group called the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project. Because landlords know that people can pay $3,000 or $4,000 a month who work in these technology industries, affordable housing is being neglected and lost, she says. The Mapping Project keeps records of evictions as longtime residents are forced out of rental properties. Some groups in San Francisco Bay Area neighborhoods are looking for ways to control the rising cost of rental housing. San Francisco officials and activists agreed to keep rental housing costs under control in the city's Chinatown neighborhood. The International Hotel was home to many Philippine and Chinese American residents. The old hotel was torn down in 1981, but rebuilt in 2005. Local Roman Catholic officials worked with community groups to create affordable housing in the area. Some local governments are reacting too. Oakland stopped rate increases for 3 months on its older housing in April. San Francisco activists want a similar law to help renters who are struggling with rental payments. Tourism is another reason for the high real estate prices. San Francisco is a popular stop for both U.S. and overseas travelers. This puts a high demand for hotel, apartments, single-family homes, and office space. After San Francisco and New York, the top most expensive U.S. cities for renters are Boston and Washington, D.C., says the Zumper website. The world's most expensive city for housing is Singapore, according to a report by the Economist Intelligence Unit. I am Dorothy Gundy.
Researchers say hotter summer days and summer nights are possible for the Middle East by the middle of this century. Ann Ball has more.
Climate change may make parts of the Middle East too hot for human beings, according to a new study. Researchers from the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry and the Cyprus Institute studied weather conditions in the Middle East since 1970. The researchers say very hot days in the area have doubled over that period. Right now, over 500 million people live there. In the future, the climate in large parts of the Middle East and North Africa could change, says Jos Lalieveld, director at the Max Planck Institute and a professor at the Cyprus Institute. He added that because temperatures could get so high, those living in the area could be at risk. Researchers say temperatures in summer in the Middle East and North Africa will continue rising. The nights and days will be hotter, too. The researchers believe that by 2050, temperatures will not fall below 30 degrees Celsius at night in the hottest part of summer. During this period, daytime temperatures could rise to 46 degrees Celsius. Extreme heat could continue past the middle of the 21st century. Researchers think temperatures in the middle of the day could reach as high as 50 Celsius. Heat waves could increase, and those hot periods are likely to last longer. If mankind continues to release carbon dioxide as it does now, people living in the Middle East and North Africa will have to expect about 200 unusually hot days, says Panos Haginikolou, a climate change expert with the Cyprus Institute. The researchers also looked at the amount of fine particulate air pollution in the Middle East. They found that the amount of dust in the atmosphere over Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Syria jumped 70% since the start of the century. This, they say, could have resulted from an increase in the number of sandstorms caused by climate change. The researchers created two models. In one model, rising temperatures are limited because of reductions in greenhouse gases. Studies have linked production of such gases to rising temperatures. The other model is said to be a business-as-usual model, where nothing is done to stop climate change. Under both models, the future of the Middle East is not good, the researchers say. They added that climate change can result in a slow worsening of living conditions for people in North Africa and the Middle East. They also said sooner or later, many people may have to leave the region. I'm Ann Ball.
This is what's trending today. The Leicester City soccer players gathered at a teammate's home Monday evening. They were anticipating the result of another game in the English Premier League. For the first time in 132 seasons, Leicester City, also known as the Foxes, was positioned to finish the season as the champion of England's top soccer league. But the first half of the match between Tottenham Hotspur and Chelsea did not look good. If Tottenham won, Leicester's celebration would have to be put on hold for at least one more week. At halftime, Tottenham was ahead 2-0. Gary Cahill scored to make it 2-1. Then Eden Hazard got the equalizer with just 7 minutes to play. When the referee blew his whistle to signal the end of the game, the Leicester City players went crazy. Because of the tie score, Tottenham cannot overtake Leicester for first place. The result set off celebrations in England and beyond. People around the world followed the story of Leicester City this season. Thailand is one place that caught fever for the Foxes. That is because the owner of the team is from Thailand, and his company, King Power, is the sponsor. Most Thai soccer fans like the famous English teams like Manchester United or Chelsea, but not anymore. In fact, a Buddhist monk at a temple in Bangkok blessed the team earlier this season and predicted it would win the championship. Now the monk and his temple are considered magical and holy by Leicester City fans. Sports experts say Leicester is one of the most unlikely teams ever to win a major championship. The Foxes played so well, they won the title with 2 games to go. Leicester started the season as a 5,000-1 underdog. Just 7 years ago, the team was in the third division of English soccer. Thanks to the play of top goal scorer Jamie Vardy and the direction of manager Claudio Ranieri, the Foxes took over first place in the league at the end of December 2015. The Foxes built a 5-point lead in the standings by February and continued to play well late in the season to clinch the title. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
For the first time in almost 40 years, a U.S. cruise ship has arrived in Havana, Cuba. The Carnival Cruise Line ship, Adonia, and its 700 passengers left Miami on Sunday, arriving the next day on the island nation. hundreds of Cubans gathered to watch the arrival of the Adonia. They cheered and took photographs as the ship docked. AP News Agency spoke to Mercedes Lopez in Havana. She is a 54-year-old nurse. She waited for hours to see the Adonia arrive at Havana's cruise terminal. "This is history," she said. "This is a little step forward, a little step towards normalization, peace, family unification." The passengers of the Adonia were welcomed with live music and dancing inside the cruise terminal. A crowd of Cubans waited in Old Havana's plaza to take tourists on walking tours. Tens of thousands of Cubans have tried to cross the Florida Straits on homemade boats. Thousands are believed to have died in that process. Cruises and other ships often rescue those stranded in homemade boats. The cruise ship's arrival marks another step in restoring U.S.-Cuba relations. But the voyage almost did not happen. Cuban officials wanted to ban Cubans who had left the country from sailing back to their birthplace. The officials feared they would cause political problems. U.S. and Cuban officials settled the matter during talks. U.S. cruises are expected to bring Cuba tens of millions of dollars. More than 10 other cruise lines have announced plans to run U.S.-Cuba cruises. If they all begin operations, Cuba could earn more than $80 million a year, says the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council. But environmental scientists fear that a major increase in cruise travel will seriously damage the island. For now, Cuba has the healthiest marine life in the Caribbean Sea. Experts from the Environmental Defense Fund's Cuba program say that an increase in large ships in Cuba's coastal waters will harm coral reefs and marine life and reduce water quality. Air service between the two nations also is expected to restart later this year. The U.S. and Cuba agreed to permit 20 flights a day from the U.S. to Havana and 10 daily flights to Cuba's 9 other international airports. Cuba received a record 3.5 million visitors in 2015, according to Reuters News Agency. That is a 17% increase from 2014. Reuters says the number of American visitors in 2015 rose 77% from 2014. Experts worry that the island is not yet ready for the growing number of American visitors. The Cuban government is seeking foreign investment to develop its tourism industry. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.